I'd like to introduce Joan Larkin, poet, editor, and publisher of Out and Out Books in Brooklyn, which is a publishing house of lesbian and feminist poetry and now prose and pamphlets. Her book house work, her first book house work, was published by Out and Out Books. She is a co-editor of Amazon Poetry with Ella Balkin, an anthology that I'm sure most of you know and treasure. And Joan is a very fine poet whose newest work in particular I'm very excited about.
I'm going to read, I want to use the mic, but I can get it close enough to pick me up. Thank you. Thanks. How's this? Can everybody hear me? Okay. I'm going to read some poems from Housework and also some more recent work. This is called The Choice. When they choose abortion for you, and the plane shakes your heart like a bower, and the dream of the baby blackens like plants, and your father advises like ice claws, and your mother comforts like a red apron, and the doctor smiles like iron, and your womb delivers a bowl of blood to the mouth of the toilet announcing nothing, and the salt flows like a poultice on the red howl inside you, and the cloth drops like an elevator. At last, it's a dead story. Son of my inheritance. My mother gave me a bitter tongue. My father gave me a turned back. My grandmother showed me her burned hands. My brother showed me a difficult book. These were their gifts. The rest was talk. I discovered my body in the dark. It had a surprise in its little crack. I started to say what I'd found in the dark, but my mother gave me a dirty look, and my father turned a key in the lock. I was left alone with the difficult book and the stove that burned my grandmother's hands. And while they muttered behind my back, I learned to read and to make my bread, to eat my words and lie flat in my bed. They took me to school where I learned to be cute. I wore clean jumpers and washed my hands. I put my hands up to cover my mouth. I listened to everything everyone said and kept what I could in my stuffed up head. I had weeping eyes and a chest that coughed, a stomach that hurt, and a mouth that laughed whether or not I felt good or bad. I was always promoted to the next grade. I graduated. I got laid. I did what girls were supposed to do. I wore a white dress. I was photographed. My teeth were perfect. My knees were crossed. I cleaned up the mess that the baby made. I hope that my body's price is paid. I'm giving the gifts back one by one. I'm tearing the pages of my past. I'm turning my back. I'm turning them down. I'm burning their strict house to the ground. May I never want bread at their table again. May I let go of these bitter rhymes, and may this burial be my last while I live in my body and learn from my bones to make some less predictable sound. Let this coffin of verses inherit my pen. This is called Song for Female Voices. There are two voices, a mother's and a daughter's, completing each other's fantasies, dreams, interrupting them. Suddenly, nothing is coming right. My lovely child has become fat. Her face is red with ugly scabs. Love, does it mean I am a bad mommy? Please stay with me. Don't go to work today. My tummy hurts. I want milk in my bottle. I want mother. I wanted to be a great authoress or author's mistress. I am always late to work. Always I wanted to be a perfect woman. You to lie down with me. I plead again in bed. My daddy never yelled. Now you're making me cry. A mother big with wonderful dinners in the pot and children I only sing to. A woman woven of different threads, drought in the kitchen but in bed. I only want my daddy. Yes, he takes care of me. He calls me his little baby and tucks me in. I'll play a lute of long hair and little nightgown. I'll move like a soft-coated animal. The moon will be drawn to touch my body in love. I want my blanket. Please, can't we go to the zoo? When I'm big, I'll get real babies. Then I'll be just like you. This poem is for my daughter, Kate. It's called Blood. You mix flesh your first time with his pink box, raw sienna, white, Indian red. His knife spreads grease rainbows on the palate. What will you do now that your father's dead? You of my poems, whose eyes swallow me whole like the dark that drank per second. You spread the pink with delicate, bloody strokes on a large, red-lipped woman you say is me. You ripened in my blood like a red fruit until you split the air with your separate breath. Then I could not protect you from the father's, nor can I bear for you now this father's death. We paint each other large, daughter, mother, images delivered in each other's dark. I've drunk the light of your hair. You've swallowed hell and can survive the ways it wants you back. This is called Sleeping on the Left. I guess I should say somebody should write that poem that you're laughing about. This is really not true. It's really about the left side of the body. I pommeled it, she said, the word like marble, embarrassing me. She remembered being kept from the camps. She was three. On that field at the edge of death, her mother kissed her. Her father did not look up. 30 years later, the Dutch woman said, yes, it did happen that way when I saved you. But what about the side? Did you wake me that year so I wouldn't sleep on my left side? That side gives bad dreams, they say. And he had nightmares every night. He had to turn me over. Her nightmares are over, she tells me. They rose to her throat. She screamed. She carnaled them away. But for me, her dreams are just beginning. Her mother's kiss unfinished. Her father's bent head. I'd like to read some love poems. This one's called Stop. I hate it when you fill my glass up without asking me. I always liked a little on a plate in a cup, an egg with space around it, an orange with a knife next to it, a cup with space above the coffee, discreet colors, orange, pewter, black, the porcelain glaze on the china, the blue napkin. I want to keep things separate. I hate it when you break my egg. I hate when you salt things, when you assume I want cream, or the shade down, or touch, or looks of kindness. I want nothing to lose its cutting edge, nothing to run together. You had better stop pouring yourself into my glass.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a love poem that I was also hoping to do with signs, some unsaid things. I was not going to say how you lay with me, nor where your hands went and left their light impressions, nor whose face was white as a splash of moonlight, nor who spilled the wine, nor whose blood stained the sheet, nor which one of us wept to set the dark bed rocking, nor what you took me for, nor what I took you for, nor how your fingertips in me were roots, light roots, torn leaves put down, nor what you tore from me, nor what confusion came of our twin names, nor will I say whose body opened, sucked, whispered like the ocean, unbalancing what had seemed a safe position. The wrists, when your hair beats over me like gold and scoops me like brooms of Demeter, and your mouth burns my waist into forgetting, and your fingers wet my hips with words for the opening of caves, and your tongue finds my invisible vein of salt, and your breasts fall on mine like the night canopy, and your eyes stand awake like sailors, and you rock me like a hammock under the near stars. And I'm going to conclude with two poems that go together. I'd like to dedicate them to Auden. Two songs of the breast. One, envy of the breast. Women, said my woman doctor, do things with two hands, touching my breasts with her two hands. Why the American cancer establishment tells me to lie on my back, feeling myself single-handed, trying to find the not yet expressed, the keenest eye they think I miss if I half come of the one rib they milk to find their mother, their fear she's found there, envy of the breast. I have two eyes, two breasts, two hands I lay me down to rest. Self-love. Breast to my breast, I held my beloved with both hands. Her breath came through my house. Closed eyes, remember, river, cinnamon fern, sea cave, and wet conch unburied by my fingers from pulling mud. I make my body sing. I am the potter and the spinning clay. She sings, I center, I put my two hands to myself and feel all this. Barbara Smith modestly asked to be introduced only by her name, so I'm going to ignore that for a minute and just say only that, as far as I'm concerned, she's been the dynamo of this NLA and has conducted some of the most exciting sessions going. And if you haven't read her piece on Black feminist criticism in the latest issue of Conditions, you have to get it and read it. Barbara Smith.
Thank you. I just want to say this is a totally intimidating experience for me. And those of you who know me, I don't get easily intimidated, so just bear with me. The reason for that is that, like I think many women, I spent many years not writing as opposed to writing. And there was a pretty substantial reason for that. Not the least being going to the oldest women's college in the country, Mount Holyoke, to take the creative writing courses and getting seen, and then, you know, believing that I couldn't do that because I could do anything else. I also feel that it's significant that most of the things that I have written that mean a lot to me were written after I came out.
in early 1975. Before I begin, the last thing I want to say is I'm not sure that one can live and be a black person's poet and live to tell about it, but perhaps the poems to them might help prove otherwise. I'll begin. I will not provide for you an easily digestible oppression, statistically provable, ideologically correct, a safe and faceless victim you can handle, no college degrees, no semi-professional job, no job at all, no vision on the tongue. I swear it. You will not find that cipher you invented inside of you. This is called Theft. It's for Angelina Wells Remke, who was talking about last night at Women's Writers in the Harlem Renaissance. And I think that it is self-explanatory. The white women are talking about their poet for hours while claiming that they do not have enough. I gather strength and throw my voice into the world they think they know. Tell them, yes, there were some few black women who wrote and lived their lives, loving women. They are curious. But when I say the black namesake of someone white they think they know, one shouts, he's not black. Teeth clutching, I try to explain in seconds about bloodlines, black and white house of family, race, despite the hurt and genius, the Civil War. Finally, her slender arrogance is still. Last night, I looked for comfort in the poet whose life was crushed by everything she was, including black. She merely warned me in a big tongue that for survival, we must often play invisible, the masquerade, must save our best and darkest selves for us. This is a poem called The Bowl. I went home on Monday to Cleveland to visit my two great aunts, who besides my sisters are my closest living relatives. And I'm real interested in what they think about me at this point. Because of that, of course, you know, that I am king. And yet, you know, I was really very gratified. You know, I had seen one of them recently in the summertime, but what I was gratified by on this visit is that, you know, of course they still love me, they still think I look wonderful despite the fact that I am museums, etc. And it's a very nice experience. One of the things that I did was to give each of these great aunts, I don't know how old she is, I think she's 80, and the other one, she is 84. I gave them a copy of the poem that I'm going to read, because it's one of the few poems that I've written that is not, self-revealing, about, being a lesbian. And I gave it, one of the great aunts, I gave it to the one who's 84, who is also a Scorpio like myself. My aunt, who raised me before she died, told me that this aunt is a lesbian, this great aunt of mine is a lesbian. And we had never discussed it. You know, I don't even know exactly what was meant by the statement. But the fact that sex and sexuality was never discussed, when I was growing up, I took my aunt's word for it, certainly. And what she got for it, she got the kind of poetry that a black woman, who was born in a swamp in a town before the turn of the century would write. I asked her if she had any copies of anything that she had written. In other words, religious words and lines, but it's not bad, actually. I was looking at it this morning. Technically, it's not, the worst that it could be. And besides, talking about Jesus and God and stuff, it has a very good spirit. And she gave me a copy of her poem, Mimeograph, in the newsletter from the Golden Age apartment building that she lived in. I gave her a copy to give. And I read it out loud to her because she can hardly speak and also she can't hear. So I was sort of shouting this poem and kissing And it was a very deep experience. And then when I talked to her on the telephone later, before I got on the phone, she said it was one of the best calls that she's ever written. I've ever read, and I appreciated that. So this is for her, actually, and for all of us in our family. The bowl. Today, I'm making for my friend a rich dark bill, coarse with a million teeth, a smell that keeps his breathing. What do I have to hold it? I search and find a coffee bowl left over from my childhood. Suddenly, work is ritual. This empty bowl, like sky blue stripes, is full of pictures, everything. Rolls and cakes and sweet potato pie, stuffing, cream, my mouth and eyes fill up. My people use this bowl to mix their lives. It's where I learn a way of eating caring with the taste. I see them mixing now, eating, spilling, keeping time. My fingers slyly slipping in. If women's lives were fables and chicken soup adventures, this bowl would be a talisman, telltale, and even fly. But now it is an ordinary bowl, the place those first women in my world taught me to shape more than necessary bread my life. There is a trick they do, the white boys. This is how it goes. You are in a place you don't belong, a restaurant, an airport, your office, the street. When one of them walks towards you, he either looks right through you or stares right at you in total disbelief. Either way, he disappears. This trick is called trying the invisible colors that you can have. But it happens on these goddamn elevators. I'm a little bit tired of it, actually. I'm glad to go home. This is what I usually have to do as my black lesbian form. And it was written in January of this year, but it is about what happened on my birthday in November of 76. With you, the night that I turned 30, awake at the very moment of my birth, I hold my breath and scream once more for my mother's startled body. Across the continent of doubt, the chasm of fear, I invent the freedom to lie once more in another black woman's heart. This is the last thing that I'm going to read, and I don't put titles on this thing, you know, but I guess it would be the title that you call the impossible form. I feel like all the things that I write are impossible. I don't know where they come from. I don't know, if whatever I do write is the few things that I have. I don't know if I will ever, have the ability to do such again. But it looks like they're all impossible, but that's the system is tired. This is the impossible form, the dangerous one, in which one woman takes another woman into her life and starts to live. This is the impossible form, the midnight one, that makes you feel the first calm they felt, the words they said, the food they ate, the dead in which their bodies met, and how they love. This is the impossible form, the buried one, the buried one of root from days that pass and those other lives without a tendril notice. This is the possible form, the daylight one, that asks, take your life into your hands, take your life into your own two hands, take your life into another's hand, come out to life and live. I'd like to introduce Jerry McCallum, who I don't know anything about. that he's a black folk singer, so I know that he's fine.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.